1-800-449-8686.
You know, I was reading about this poor kid in Utah. You heard about this girl, Elizabeth Smart. She was taken at gunpoint from her room. Now, this is about the end of the line. This is about as brazen as it gets. Guy walks into your house and takes your kid, and he's got a gun. Comes right into your house, comes right through your window. And this is a home in a so-called upscale neighborhood. I don't know if this is a gated community, if they had a security gate, but it's a pretty, looks like a fairly well-off neighborhood. I mean, this is a home that looks to be at least 5,000 square feet. In other words, it's not an inexpensive place to live. These are people of means. I'm not, by the way, criticizing the father at all or the family or saying they should have done anything. I'm just going to say this. This is as good a time as any in the history of this country, and I'm not saying living in America today is any more dangerous than it was 100 years ago, because I don't believe that. I know enough about history to tell you that it's probably not true that it's more dangerous living in America today than it was 100 years ago. Because it really isn't. We have more people, we have more per capita everything, and we have, commensurate to that, more exposure of that through the media. And hence, it looks like everything is bigger and more frequent, when in point of fact, while it may be more frequent, it doesn't necessarily mean you're any less safe than you might have been back in the good old days of Norman Rockwell and the gingham dress and lets the wagons go west for the Pillsbury Bake Off. So that's why today is as good a time as any for you to go out and buy yourself a gun. Now, I'm not saying this to panic you. I'm saying that it is a sensible thing to own a gun. If you know how to use it, if you've had training in using it, if you understand the parameters within which it should be used, there is absolutely no reason why any home in America should be without a firearm. I own a 9mm. I own a Glock 9mm. It is a fantastic weapon. Some people like the .22 with the rat shot. I got this friend. I can't even tell you what he does for a living because I don't really know. All I know is the guy goes to Israel a lot on business. And he's a very interesting guy. He's about 10 years older than me. He's been around the block a little bit. He goes to Israel a lot. Used to work in the defense business. And I was sitting with him one night, and we were talking about weapons. I was talking to him about going to Israel and what he does down there. And he goes to Tel Aviv and is very familiar with doing business in Israel, has a great many contacts there, also has a couple of contacts in Egypt, and was quite connected down there during his days as a consultant in the defense business. And you sit down with some guys, and they're really interesting. You know, well, what kind of a gun have you got there?
Well, Phil, I have a number of guns.
Oh, you don't have just one?
No. One? No, I've got automatic weapons. I have Uzis. I've got a shoulder-mounted Stinger missile system. I could take your home right off of its foundation. But let me tell you something, Phil. I'm a good deal older than you, and I think what you would want is something that can fire off.
Now, I said to him, now, what do you think is the best weapon to own in protecting a home? A shotgun?
Oh, no.
Well, why not?
Well, because you're going to make a mess. That's what you're going to do. You're going to take the guy's head off and everything else. And, you know, you could hit somebody that is not. No, my idea is the pistol. He says the pistol is the best weapon. He says you get a pistol and you get a .22. You can get a .22 with rat shot. Now, rat shot is a good deal smaller than bird shot or buckshot. And rat shot is the kind of thing that'll just make a little spray there and it explodes inside the body. I'm listening to this guy. Holy God. Rat shot. Yeah, well, what do you get rat shot? Well, when I grew up in Texas, we used to kill rats. You know, we'd take a .22 and we'd blow a rat's head off. You could literally, with the good marksmanship, you could hit a rat with a .22 and explode the little rat, and that's the end of that. Nothing else gets hurt in the house. He says, well, that's really interesting. Let's go rat hunting some weekend. I'd love to take you, Phil. But, you know, I'm talking to this guy, and so with his help, I have gone out in my time and done my fair
my fair share of perusing of weapons and, when need be, purchasing weapons, etc. But the point I'm trying to make is simply this. I don't want to scare anybody because I don't think there's any need to scare anyone. I'm just, when I see a story like this little girl, and I recognize that there was nothing that this father or mother could have done. Yeah, I understand that there was a security system that might have been activated. I don't know how you get through a window that's locked. I'm really, without making a lot of noise, although I'm sure that there are some people out there that would probably tell me at length, not that I want to take any phone calls from them, but I'm sure they could spend 40 minutes telling me how you could jimmy a lock on a window or disarm a home security system or what have you. But I will say that given smart security steps in your home, locking windows at night, a home security system if you got one, there's no reason why the average American home shouldn't have at least one weapon in it, owned by someone who knows how to use it, someone who's been trained in its use, and as I said before, someone who understands the parameters of the use of that weapon and understands the law with regard to how to use that weapon. Because you understand if you blow somebody away outside of your house, not in your home, but on your property, you got yourself a problem. If you shoot them in the back, I mean, there's a number of things. Not that you're going to be thinking about any of this, really, if it comes down to a life and death situation. But there are instances when perhaps the police are on their way, but you've got a situation you got to deal with right away. Or you haven't been able to get to the phone to call the police, and you have a situation you got to deal with right away. There are instances, and believe me, guys, the first thing you do is call a cop. That's the first thing you do is call the police. But beyond that, after calling the police, or even before, you should have a gun in your home. And I don't want to hear about, well, you know what, you're entitled to your opinion, but if you're going to give me this thing about, no, I think that they're wrong, nobody's telling you got to shoot anybody. Some people think if you have a gun in the house, it draws real negative karma into the house, and you're going to wind up using it. Hey, look, if you don't want to think of it in terms of killing an intruder, think of it this way. Set up some cans on a fence and do target practice. Take it out to the pistol range. Go out once a month and sharpen up your rusty skills. Go skeet shooting. Go bird shooting. Come over to my house and kill some of those swallows that are crapping all over my backyard. Whatever you want to do. But there is no reason, really, in modern America why every home shouldn't have a marvelously constructed, a beautifully crafted, and a handy and convenient and sometimes fun gun. You know, we have a country here that, I don't know about you, I value this place. I think this is a great place. I happen to have a nice home. I'm sure you do, too. I'm sure you love your kids. You love your friends. You've got a nice life. Or you're working on having a nice life. Or maybe you had a nice life and right now you're in a little bit of a trough, but you're on your way to another nice life. Wherever you are, you could be in a lot worse shape. And there are times when, despite all of our best efforts at being good, honest, decent people, somehow the scumbags make their way into our lives. And sometimes the only way of dealing with them is by dispatching them, shall we say. Or barring that, scaring them. Or barring that, if you want to put it another way, taking the fight to them. However you want to put it, defending your family. Let's put it that way. Today, we live in a country, we live in a world where the manufacture of weapons has reached such a proficient point, such a sharpened edge, that you can find any number of marvelous weapons to defend your house with. 22s, 9mm, 38s, you got barrel loaded, you got clip, you can semi-automatic, automatic. Long guns, short guns, in-between guns, rat shot, bird shot, 12-gauge, 10-gauge. There's a gun for every member of your family. And I ain't kidding when I say, go out this weekend, bring the kids. Go to a gun shop. Consider this. It's a great country. You're great people. There's some bad people out there. Most likely you'll never run into them. But if you did, no matter how big, no matter how bad, no matter how many tats, no matter what color, they used to call a gun in the old days of the Old West the Great Equalizer. And that's exactly what it is. No matter who the adversary, pretty much any one of the weapons that I just mentioned will stop them cold. Stop them pretty much in their tracks. So I would consider that. When we look at these stories, I'm saying that the likelihood of this happening to you is remote at best. But when we do see these stories and we feel for these families, we recognize in ourselves, gee, what would I do? We ask the same question. What? How would I, what, you know? And you don't want to be in a position where there's your family gathered around you. You're at the mercy of somebody coming through a window. And maybe you've gotten to the phone, and maybe you've called 911, and maybe that's going to be just a little bit too long a margin of time for you to have to deal with something. And maybe you want it just a little bit more backup. So I heartily suggest, whether you're a Democrat or a conservative or a liberal or a Republican or a libertarian or black or white or Hispanic, you got a family, you have things that you own, you work hard, you value the world that you live in, you particularly value the society you live in, you like enjoying life, go out, get a gun, keep it in your home, keep it responsibly, know where the ammunition is, lock it away from the kids, but know how to use it. Train yourself in the art of using it and recognize those moments when you will use it and use it if you have to. It's just one of the many things that we have at our disposal. Dishwashers, cars, bowling balls, condoms, and guns. 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show. Now I want to do a very quick segue. We'll take a break and we've got a big treat for you, and I'm a little bit nervous because coming up in a few minutes, we mentioned this yesterday that it was possible, and today we've been able to nail it down. Mike Tyson, who will be facing Lennox Lewis tomorrow night in Memphis for the heavyweight championship of the world, is going to be on the phone with us just minutes away. Mike Tyson here on The Phil Hendry Show, just minutes away. Stick around.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
1-800-449-8686 is our number, and we're happy this afternoon to have on. I misspoke. We have Lennox Lewis, who is one half of the big story tomorrow night in Memphis, Tennessee. It is the fight for the heavyweight championship of the world between Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis, who joins us now from the Peabody Hotel in Memphis. And we thank you very much, Mr. Lewis, for joining us.
Thank you.
Can you tell me about this fight and how what your strategy might be against against Mike Tyson?
Well,
for instance, in the early rounds, they say that, you know, Tyson's a guy who comes out firing. What, how do you plan on dealing with that?
Well, I think that Mike is a fighter who will tire out early. You know, he can come out. He can fight with a great deal of power in his punches, but he's not a patient fighter.
That's what I was trying to allude to. So he's not a patient man, and he's not good in the long run?
No, he's not good. Mike is not a good fighter in the late round. If you notice and you look at the history of his fighting, he has always knocked people out, you know, early on.
Right.
And what our strategy is going to be is to stay with him. Now, we're not going to try to outslug him, but I will use my jab. I'm going to press the fight and tire him out early so that he gets frustrated.
What about that famous temper of his? And we know about him biting ears and biting legs. And
well, no, that's not going to be an issue because that only works in my favor. If he loses his temper, if he is not ready to come out and fight, then he's going to be a if he lets his temper get the best of him,
then he's going to lose control of the fight.
He'll lose control of the fight. That's right. And so I'm confident that if any of that happens, then he's playing right into our hand. But I don't think he's going to let himself get out of control early. I think what's going to happen more than anything else, he just gets frustrated. He's going to start to swing wild. He'll start to throw some punches that he should not. He'll leave himself open.
About what round do you anticipate? Where does Mike Tyson begin to sort of get frustrated and leave himself open, as you say?
Well, I would expect anywhere from the fourth or fifth round on that he'll start to tire out, he'll start to get angry, he'll start to get frustrated, and he'll start to do things, stupid things, that'll leave him open for me to come in with my jab, then me to come in with, get inside of his punches, get inside and start to, take his toll. But I think we can wrap this fight up earlier than that, because I think that he will get wild, and I think we'll get inside and score, and I think we can wrap the fight up.
What and how many rounds? I heard your trainer, Emmanuel Stewart, say two rounds.
Well, two rounds is optimistic, but I think we can. I definitely think I can knock him out in five, six rounds.
Your favorite five or six rounds?
Right.
Your favorite in the press, does that affect your concentration?
No, I don't pay any attention to what the press say one way or the other. You know, I don't know where you hear that I'm favored in the press.
Well, there's some people in the press. I know the broadcast media is leaning more toward Mike Tyson.
Well, they're leaning for Mike, I think, because they want to see a rematch. I would say there's going to be a rematch no matter what right now. But I would definitely grant him a rematch.
So if you win the fight, you will give him a rematch?
No question. But that doesn't affect me one way or the other. We know what we've got to do. We know that we have, we got our work cut out for it, but there's no doubt in my mind.
Now, among common opponents, Tyrell Biggs, you knocked him out in three. It took Tyson seven rounds. Frank Bulta, you knocked out in two rounds. It took Tyson five. Frank Bruno... and other fighters. Evander Holyfield, you fought to a draw, but Mike was KO'd. Any comment specifically about Holyfield?
Yeah, I think that Evander Holyfield is a much smarter fighter than Mike Tyson, and that's why I think more than anything else, he was able to defeat him in that fight, and also Mike got frustrated with him and bit here, there, and everybody made a big thing about that.
Let me ask you something, Lennox. You've been described as being about as exciting as cold tea. What do you think about that?
I'm excited as cold tea.
In other words, people think that you don't have much of a personality.
I don't know. I'm a fighter. I'm not a movie star. Get them tap dancing and entertain people. I just my thing is I fight for a living. You know, and I work hard, doing the best I can inside the ring. But outside the ring, you know, it's my business, my life. So people will think what they want to think about me, but I'm not entertainer or anything like that. So I'm.
So you just, you know, in this day and age of sports celebrity, you don't really you're not too enthralled by that.
No, I'm not. Not at all.
I'm talking with Lennox Lewis from the Peabody Hotel in Memphis right now. Lennox, you said five rounds.
I think five rounds.
And that's based upon your belief that Mike will get frustrated and he'll get wild.
He'll get frustrated and get wild. He may lose his temper. I don't know. You know, he may try to take a bite out of me. You know, I don't think that he is going to be able to go much more than four or five rounds before he starts to get wild, before he starts to get frustrated.
And how do you keep yourself away from that very, very punishing barrage of punches that people anticipate he will open up the fight with against you?
Well, it's not a difficult thing to tire a man out early. It's not a difficult thing to use a defensive tactic to tire a man out. And that I'll do. I hope he gets wild. I hope he comes out firing. I hope he tired himself out by fourth, fifth round.
Do the two of you ever talk outside of the ring?
No, we don't. He's not. He says some things about me. I don't have any interest in talking to him about anything. You know, he's just a. He's a little dumb, and they're not much.
He's dumb?
Yeah.
Lennox, thank you very much. I got a break. I appreciate very much you joining us for this brief chat here on the Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you.
All right, that's Lennox Lewis, and from the Peabody Hotel in Memphis. We'll be back. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show.
1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Tomorrow night for the heavyweight championship of the world, Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis. You just heard us do an exclusive 10-minute interview with Lennox Lewis from the site of the fight, Memphis, Tennessee, just a few minutes ago. I want to go back to a portion of that interview. We have it on tape. Listen to Lewis's response to my question about the early rounds of the fight and what his strategy will be against Mike Tyson. And then we'll invite your phone comments at 1-800-449-8686. Let's listen to this portion of the interview again where I address with Lennox his strategy in the early rounds. And so what I would ask you, Lennox, in other words, so in the early rounds, you're going to be looking to tire him out?
The early round of the fight is when Mike generally is at his strongest. What we'll try to do is I'm going to try to jab. I'll try to stay with him. But I'm going to definitely try to tire him out and get him frustrated because he is not used to going much more than 5-6 rounds. And if I can get him frustrated and get him tired out and get him to start to swing wild, which is what he do eventually, I'll be able to, I think we'll be able then to be able to exploit that. But he does tend to swing wild later on in the fight when he tires out.
All right, that was just a few minutes ago, Lennox Lewis on our airwaves talking about what he sees as the top strategy or the most pivotal strategy in this fight tomorrow night, and that is to get Mike Tyson, and hold on for just a minute. We have David Hall on the line. All right, hold on. And that's to get Mike Tyson frustrated and angry in the early going. And we're going to get on our Vice President of Syndication, David Hall. Yes, David?
Hendry, I am telling you something right now. You are going to put this company in a position to get sued.
Well, okay, hold on for a minute.
No, hold on for a minute.
Hold on for, what are you, I'm on the air right now, and I think I can deal with this later.
No, you're not going to put me on hold or deal with this after the show. You're talking to me right now. You are putting this company in a position to get sued. Now,
I'm not sure what you're talking about, but
you know what I'm talking about. That wasn't Lennox Lewis. That was you doing a black guy voice.
You know something? I don't know what you're talking about.
I'll get off it, will you? What are you talking about? You don't know that Lennox Lewis is British?
Lennox Lewis is black.
Oh, he's black. He's black. So therefore he sounds like he comes from a cotton field. Is that it?
David, I have to deal with this.
No, you're dealing with it right now. You're going to get us sued. You went on the air and purported to interview Lennox Lewis. And it was you doing the voice of a black guy on the phone, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
why?
Because...
Can't you pick up the phone and call the real Lennox Lewis?
Well,
Or does your show suck so bad that when you want to get Lennox Lewis on the phone, you do a black guy voice and interview yourself? I mean, are you so lame, you can't even get a real guest? You got a fake one? You don't even know where the guy's from. Hi, I got Lennox Lewis on the phone. Guy sounds like he comes out of Alabama.
I didn't know he was from Britain.
You didn't know he was from Britain. How did you guys cook this one up?
David.
How did you guys cook this one up?
I said to Janice, what's the chances of us getting Lennox Lewis? And she said, you know, snowball's chance in hell.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I'll pretend like I'm him.
So you said you'll pretend like you're him. Were you thinking people were going to buy it? Phil, I'm asking you.
Yes, I did. I thought they'd buy it.
Phil, you got the Lennox Lewis voice confused with the Kingfish voice. What do you think this is, Amos and Andy? Why didn't you just get on there and go, tell you something now, Phil. I think y'all going to find out win this fight.
Okay, I didn't know he was from England. I mean...
You think all black guys sound like that? The black guys from England, now I got a big newsflash for you. Guess what they sound like? Like they're from England.
Phil, tell you...
Holy Jesus. Now you leave us wide open for a lawsuit.
Look, I couldn't get the guy...
No, you couldn't get the guy. I bet you couldn't even get the guy. You couldn't get the homeless guy from across the street to come in for an interview. Yeah, everybody. Hi, I'm Phil Hendry. We got Lennox Lewis in just a few minutes here, and it's you doing a black guy voice.
Well, I knew that the fight was a big fight.
Yeah.
And people would want to hear, you know.
You know what a black guy from England sounds like?
Not really.
They sound like freaking James Bond. So you get a black guy in there, he sounds like this.
I say, sir, I think I'm going to kick my Tyson's ass all over the ring. Say what?
You know, they say cheerio and pip pip and all that bull crap.
Get out of here, they don't.
They come. The guy comes from England. And you've got that guy sounding like Stephen Fetchett right off the soundstage there. Judy Garland doing a tap dance.
Yeah, I hope we all get on back to Kansas, y'all.
Jesus! Henry, if you're going to fake like you're Lennox Lewis to sell it to the audience, find out a little bit about the guy, will you? Find out where he's from. Do you even know he's black?
Yes, obviously I do.
And what if he was white? That would have been great. Yeah, I got Lennox Lewis right now. And the guy looks like, you know, that freaking blonde from that movie. Whatever the hell that guy was. Dar's freak. Who's that blonde guy?
What blonde guy?
The guy from the Rocky movie.
Who was that guy? The big Russian?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
Who?
Who is it?
Dolph Lundgren?
Yeah, that guy. You think he talks like that?
Yeah, man.
Big and blonde and Aryan. Now what do you think's going to happen? Lewis's people call us and say, we understand you were purporting to interview Lennox, and you don't interview Lennox. We never even heard of your rotten show. And you're on there talking like a black. What are you going to say?
I'm going to say, Mr. Lewis, I'm sorry. We didn't think we could get you for an interview, so...
So you pretended you were him. And you went on, you cut, you know, like your lead belly out in the cotton field.
Y'all gonna get on down to Catfish Hall now, Mr. Jones. Hell of a day today. How about some lemonade?
God.
Well, I screwed up.
Oh, no, you screwed up. Well, did you really? I didn't think you screwed up at all. All you're gonna do is get us involved in a, what's it called, misappropriation of commercial likeness lawsuit for about $20 million, that's all. Where's Bud?
Standing right here.
Bud?
I heard it all, Mr. Hall. I got a transcript.
Good thing.
You stinking...
Don't say that to the retard.
I heard it all, and when you come in, I'll report to you.
I just wanted to be able to...
What?
To do a news talk show.
Oh, Jesus, he's gonna cry.
Everybody else gets to do interviews. Why can't I?
Are you crying?
Well, you're calling me up. You're telling me I had to get interviews with people. I can't get them. Janice is calling. She doesn't know who to call. She's calling the Motel 6 or something. Can I speak to Lennox Lewis? I got no help here.
And you're crying about it.
Yeah, you're busting on me on my show.
The reason why Janice doesn't know anything about getting guests for you is because your guests are you, you idiot.
Well, I wanted to have a real one.
You wanted to have a real one.
Mr. Henry, if we get sued because you made a dumb black voice, I'll get to be talk show host. Then you'd be sorry.
Oh, God, you wouldn't do that, would you, David?
You're damn right I would. He's the next Rush Limbaugh. I told you that.
All right,
pull yourself together. Go get a tissue.
I'm going to take a break now.
Yeah, go take a break now.
1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show.
I got it all on tape, Mr. Hall.
Good, bud.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Yes, I am Phil Henry, and I do the voices of my guests on my show. Like on yesterday's show, we had Bobby Dooley, who is the president of the Western Estates Homeowners Association. Her son Dylan, got ticketed for speeding because he was following another boy home from school. But in her mind, it wasn't her son that was speeding. The other boy forced her son to speed. She believes that her son was the victim of peer pressure and should not have to pay the price. Here's Bobby talking with a caller about how her son was completely blameless, even though his car hopped a curb, went airborne over a fence into a park, smashed down onto a table where a group of disadvantaged and mentally ill children were having a picnic. Here's Bobby Dooley.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
Your son is responsible for his actions.
How's that
Are
his
you
fault?
Telling me that somebody stuck their foot on his foot and pushed the gas down? That makes it not his fault?
Yes, Greg Russell exerted peer pressure. And these retards...
Was his exertion of peer pressure his foot on your son's foot?
Yes. Now, the retards that were in the car...
over on your son's foot?
Yes.
Is that what you're telling me? That he stuck his foot across the center console and put his foot on your son's foot?
Spiritually and psychologically, yes.
Oh, please!
Look, don't park a group of retards near a road and expect them not to be nailed by a flying Dodge Durango.
Well, what the hell was the Durango doing flying? Think about it.
Because Greg Russell forced him to go airborne.
How ignorant do you have to be to not realize that your son is responsible?
Don't you understand that your son was the one who, just as the lady said...
Phil, I won't be yelled at. I've been through enough.
Nobody's yelling at you. We're trying to knock some sense into your head.
And the police impounded the car, which is absolutely outrageous. Now he has to
take the bus. It was involved in a crime, woman. What do you think they were going to do?
Give it back to my boy. It wasn't his fault. Let the Russell boys car be impounded. And my boy gets
the
car.
Let me ask you something.
My boy
when
got a
his
job.
Friends say, hey, dude, this will be fun. Let's go in and rob the store.
Yes.
And while you're at it, shoot the guy in the head. Is that going to be not his fault, too, because, they told him to do it?
It depends on the circumstance. If you call a kid pizza face...
Lacking in parental experience and
self-esteem to say no.
No, that's exactly right. And what do you mean it was funny watching those poor retarded children scatter?
My son said it was humorous as the car was coming down to see the kids trying to get away. They were in wheelchairs or something. I don't know.
Well, you know what? If that's not guilt, I don't know what it is.
What's guilt?
Guilt.
He said it was funny. Thank God they weren't hurt. They were just scampering away on artificial legs or whatever.
Well, what if one of them would have fallen down? You are a sick woman.
How do you figure that?
You need to be committed.
One of them's missing, by the way. They don't know. That's why they impounded the car, because they think the child has somehow been wedged under the car. I don't know.
Well, my God, that's hilarious.
I mean, don't you think so?
No, she's being facetious.
What? You don't? Oh, you were joking.
I don't.
You don't think that's funny?
I'm talking about small children's lives, small children who depend on somebody else to take care of them. They have them out for an outing where they were supposed to have fun and be safe.
Okay.
And your son, because he is an idiot and can't say no, sticks his foot on the gas and airborne's his car and lands on their table. And you're trying to blame it on somebody else?
All right, let me ask you this.
If you do not make your son take responsibility for his actions, he will never take responsibility for his actions, and he will continue to be a complete menace to society.
Let me ask you this. Who's going to pay for the crutches that were taken out of the wheel well? Yeah, you don't have an answer for that, do you?
You should.
I should? I wasn't the retard that was...
Will you not use that word anymore?
I'm calling you a retard because you're not using much common sense.
Your kid was the one that landed on the table. The crutches got jammed up into his wheel well. You pay for it.
Oh, my
Amen.
God. You've both gone insane.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
There it is. That's Bobby from yesterday. Our website, philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com, is up and running 24 hours a day. And if you have a backstage pass, you can access all of our web archives. In other words, all of our audio archives, short-form bits, long-form bits. In fact, Craig is starting to load in whole hours into the audio archives of material that we've done. And also our 30-day archives. So any show that we've done over the last 30 days that you missed, you can log on there, our 30-day archives. So check it out, our backstage pass. It's only $6.95 a month. You get all that and more. Go to our souvenir shop. Pick up a Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling shirt. Pick up a Best of the Phil Hendry Show CD from any year, going back to 97. It's all there, and all of the money from the sale of our CD goes to my friend's place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood. It's philhendryshow.com. So the fight is tomorrow night. It's Lewis. It's Tyson. When is it? Tomorrow night? Oh, I know what I'm doing tonight. I'm going over to somebody's house to watch the Laker game. This is going to be a fantastic sporting weekend. Do you understand what's going on? We got the Lakers-Nets tonight. That's going to be dull, but it's a nice kickoff. See, the Lakers-Nets series, that game's 4 and out. Lakers won't lose a game. That's four and out. I'm not hedging my bets. I'm not going to be one of these sports prognosticators who believes he's making a profound and courageous statement by saying, Lakers in five. Lakers in five? Oh, they're going to lose one? Because that means if they go six, then you only missed it by one? Well, guess what? Lakers in four. Four and out, booby. Then we have, tomorrow afternoon, my favorite event of the entire weekend, and that will be the Belmont, from the beautiful Belmont Raceway in the great city of New York, as we wait to see if War Emblem can become the first horse to win the Triple Crown in over 20 years. Now, I know most of you don't know what I'm talking about. It's horse racing. But please indulge me. I grew up within just blocks of one of the world's great tracks, Santa Anita. I grew up in Arcadia, California, so I would sneak into Santa Anita, and later on, when I turned 18, I could go in and cop beers and blow my money there. And I remember trying to lay a $2 bet down, and I had $1.98, and they wouldn't give me a break on the 2 cents, and all of these wonderful memories that I have. So the Belmont is definitely going to be exciting. War Emblem, this is a mile-and-a-half race. I really suggest that you watch this. You should fall in love with horse racing. It's a tremendous sport. It's a great way to gamble. It takes a little bit of skill. It ain't like parking your ever-widening rear end there in front of the nickel slot and hoping you can win that big grandma $2 million jackpot, right? Like I saw an old lady do in Vegas not too long ago as I sat down. She puts in three nickels and she hits $1 million. And if ever, boy, I wish I had my gun then. Come on!
Well, let me just put a nickel. Oh, my sweet Christ, look at that, $1 million.
Yeah, that's real great.
Has that ever happened to you?
No, it has not happened to me. Would I be sitting here if it's happened to me?
Oh, wait till my nephew hears about it. He's having drinks over there in the palm bar.
Yeah, is he getting good and tight?
Oh, he does. And he parks me here and zing, ding, 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 blub, blub, blub. Oh, what's the red light going? What's that mean?
It means it's a jackpot.
Oh, really? Well, look at that. $1 million.
Yeah, that's really great.
Oh, you're nice.
Uh-huh. You know, and then they come over. So there's the $2 bettors. They're also the ones that, motored and fueled horse racing. Well, it's in a bad way because the casinos, a lot of the Indian gaming, etc., have drawn people away from the track as a means of laying down a couple of bucks and having some fun. But horse racing's dynamic, and if you watch this thing tomorrow, I think you're going to see something that will excite you. It's the first, possibly the first Triple Crown winner since affirmed in 1978. We had three in the 70s. We had three in the 40s and like four or five in the 30s. But this will be the first in 25 years, possibly, if War Emblem at a mile and a half can do the job tomorrow. The longest race of the three Triple Crown races, the Kentucky Derby, is a mile and a quarter. The Preakness is a mile and 3/16. This is a mile and one half. Watch the race. It'll be cool. 1-800-449. And then the French Open with the Williams sisters. Oh, I'm sorry. Bullcrap. I'm going to be rearranging lint in my navel, so I won't be able to see that. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Now, Phil Hendry.
I don't know if anybody's interested, but I am going to say something, and you're going to think I'm kidding, and I'm not. I am absolutely serious when I say this, and I believe that I have the deductive ability to say this. I don't think that I am God's gift to the world in any great shape or in any great way in many things, but I do think I have a pretty good deductive reasoning part of my brain, if I can say that. And that's why I will say to you now, and I have no doubt in my mind that this is true, that Osama bin Laden is dead. Now, I've said before on the show that I think he is. I've given you reasons why, but I have absolute proof that he is dead. Now, I'm not trying to say this because I want to create a stir. It's in the news today that Osama is alive and well, according to posters that are being plastered on walls in the area along Afghanistan's border with Pakistan. These posters declare that Osama bin Laden is alive and urge the faithful to wage war against the U.S.-led coalition. Why is it necessary to put posters along walls along the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan to let people know that Osama bin Laden is alive? Because there hasn't been hide nor hair heard of this guy since around December. And the faithful, the Al-Qaeda faithful, are beginning to worry that A, he is indeed dead and they are not going to be able to recruit, or B, he has had 8 shades of crap scared completely out of him to the point where he has gone so far underground, he doesn't want to have anything to do with anybody in Al-Qaeda. He doesn't want to have anything to do with anybody that's Arab. He just wants to go and be left alone because he now realizes that he's obviously a hunted man, and if anybody takes him alive, it's probably not going to be too pleasant for him. That's the only possible explanation. He's either so far underground because he is deathly afraid, which may or may not be true. It doesn't sound like him, or he is dead. You don't put posters up saying the following, and this is exactly what they say. I am alive. My friend Mullah Omar is alive, and it is the duty of all Muslims to wage a war on non-Muslims, the posters read, referring to the Taliban supreme leader Mullah Muhammad Omar. Meanwhile, officials say the number of people detained by countries outside the U.S., 2,500, and goes on to say it was impossible to determine whether the posters were really from bin Laden or followers using the name to rally Taliban and Al-Qaeda sympathizers. Well, let me say to you, yes, they were posters using his name to rally Al-Qaeda and Taliban sympathizers. If the man's alive, he doesn't choose a poster on a wall along the border of Pakistan to let everybody know about it. He's got an ego about as big as the World Trade Center used to be. He enjoys the idea, or at least he did while he was still alive. He enjoyed the idea of being the focal point of the jihad. He enjoyed while he was still among us being the thorn in the side of the United States. He liked the idea of being the new Hitler. He liked the idea of being the new Stalin. He wanted all of the publicity. He was releasing videotapes fast and furious while he was still alive up until December. And then what happened? Suddenly we're getting repeats. Suddenly the winter reruns kicked in. One season of Osama, and then the reruns kicked in January, and people are saying, where's the new script, where's the new material? Oops, the star's dead. He's under about 50 tons of rock somewhere out there in Tora Bora, baby. They'll never find him. How do you drop a bunker buster on one of those mountains, or one of those, the bomb, my favorite bomb of the Afghan campaign is that oxygen sucker. Did you hear about that one? Where they would drop a bomb and it would suck all of the air out of the cave. It would literally destroy all of the oxygen in the cave. And anybody in that cave would then explode from the inside. So you figure, there ain't going to be much left of this guy if and when they find any part of him. The fact of the matter is, he is dead because he would not choose a poster on a wall to let people know that he was alive. He would choose his favorite medium, which is the television. And it's the favorite medium of all of our Al-Qaeda friends. They use video to a great extent. I have seen, by the way, the Daniel Pearl video. There's a link on the Matt Drudge homepage. Now, I want to say this, and I want you to understand something. I don't think the Pearl family should see this. I do believe, and I say this with the greatest respect to that family, that you guys should go to the Drudge homepage, you should click on the link to the Pearl video, and you should watch every single second of it so that you can finally get a nose full, a mouthful, and a belly full of just exactly the scum that we're up against. And if you watch this video and you don't come away from that feeling the way that I felt on Wednesday night when I told you guys that it's time for us to declare a complete war against the Islamic fundamentalist movement and forget this little footsie we're playing with Al-Qaeda, declare a war against the entire Islamic fundamentalist Arab world. If you don't feel that way after seeing that video, then I, believe me, I'm not trying to be dramatic, then you ain't American. Take a look at it. Get a real good eyeful of exactly the garbage that we are in a life and death struggle against. If you think it's some kind of a little terror fight and our guys are out there in Eastern Afghanistan and they blew up a couple of caves and they're all run back to Pakistan and it's just, it's going to be kind of this sort of thing for the next 100 years, you got another thing coming. Take a look at this and recognize the level of animal that we're dealing with. And I will tell you this as well. and I heard people say this, I don't want to remember Daniel Pearl as a dead man. I saw the videotape, I saw what was on that tape, and I don't remember Daniel Pearl as a dead man. I remember him as a man speaking fondly of his wife, his children, his love for his family. That's the man that I remember. But you have to see for yourself, in case you've got any doubts, that the world that we live in, the world that we love, and the country that we love, is definitely under attack and is up for grabs right now, because Osama's got a couple of posters up there along the border of Pakistan, and he's alive and well. Yeah, sure. But the fact is, his people are still pumping it. He's got that Muhammad, whatever that guy is. They're all Muhammad somebody. And he was the guy that was the mastermind of 9/11, but did you see him on the videotape? No, Osama was walking around telling everybody what a big shot he was and what a brain surgeon he was, that he planned this whole thing out. And then, of course, the word leaked out that maybe we know where he is because we can recognize the kind of cave and the kind of mountain that's behind him. So the next videotape that was released, it showed a burlap sheet hanging over the cave, because suddenly Osama realized maybe we were smarter than he thought we were. And then all of a sudden, boom, no videotape. You want to know why? He's dead. He's dead. Even Al-Qaeda knows it. But nobody in the leadership of Al-Qaeda is going to spread that news to the troops, because it's going to demoralize them. Recognizing that they're having a difficult time recruiting and recognizing that it would be demoralizing, they've now tried this very weak attempt at recruiting by putting posters up saying, "Hi, I'm Osama bin Laden, and I'm alive." Right. Sure. You got it. All right. That's what he would do. He puts posters up there along a dirt road with a, you know, some guy trying to push a goat down the road. And, you know, freaking guy's got enough money to take out a billboard. That'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it? Just a billboard there on I-95. I'm Osama bin Laden and I'm alive. But at any point, he's dead. I thought you'd like to know it. Reading on in the story, posters and handbills calling for jihad or holy war against the U.S.-led coalition have appeared intermittently since the collapse of the Taliban last year. What makes these unusual is that they were written in the Pakistani language Urdu, and it indicates Al-Qaeda may be stepping up recruiting in neighboring Pakistan. Why would they have his picture on a poster? Because they can't recruit. Because there's people in Pakistan and all the other dunghills that are saying, what do I want to join you clowns with? What happened to bin Laden? Yeah, he's fine. He's, oh yeah, where is he? You know, he just stepped out, but I'm sure that it bull crap. No, really? Come on, sign up. Join Al-Qaeda. I want to talk to the guy. He's going to be out for a while because... Well, I don't want to join if the guy's dead. No, he's not dead. I swear to God he's not. You swear? I swear to God he's not. I just saw him. Got a pack of cigarettes. He's went out to get some Newports. He smokes menthol like me? Yeah, okay, I'll sign. Yeah, they got to get some guys recruited. So the guys are out there saying, well, I don't know that the guy's around. I'm not joining up with Al-Qaeda. Bin Laden's desk. They greased that guy about 2 months after he did the World Trade Center. No. The Americans can't touch him. Well, I don't know, man. Oh, come on. Nah, bug off. So now they got to put their posters up saying, hi, I'm Osama. I'm alive. Yeah, right. Remember what I told you guys 3 months ago when Che Guevara was assassinated? His comrades took his body and propped it up and released a film. After everybody thought that Che Guevara was dead, they actually released a film showing Che in this film, and they were able to convince much of the outside world that he was still alive. It's a propaganda value that is of immense value. The reason why they can't do that with Osama bin Laden, prop him up in front of a camera, is because right about now he's in about 600 different pieces, probably strewn about over a half a mile of Tora Bora. If they ever find a guy, it's like a jigsaw puzzle, you know. What are they gonna do? Prop his head up? Here he is. We've got his head in a petri dish. So he's gone, he's greased, he's dead. Thanks a lot. Good riddance to bad rubbish is what I say. Plus they got the poster hanging there next to a Pall Mall ad, you know, and another one, Mullah Bin Ding selling a donkey and three carpets, and you know, the carpet warehouse, you know, and Osama's alive, and there's another one, you know, Black Flag reunion at the Roxy, and I just, forget it. It's like on a telephone pole. Osama's alive. 1-800-449-8686. Other news, in a moment we're going to deal with Jennifer Lopez is divorcing, and Janice got this call just before we went on the air of a young man who wants to propose himself to be J-Lo's new squeeze, and he wants to do it on the air, so we'll see how this works. Coming up here on The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
1-800-449-8686.
All right, I want to bring on, hold on for just a minute, I want to bring on Christopher Norton. He's a telemarketer, and he is a huge fan of Jennifer Lopez. And the reason why we're bringing him on, now, I want to ask you something, Mr. Norton?
Yes, sir.
Weren't you on my show yesterday talking about how you had photographs?
Yes, I was.
Had photographs of yourself in a Spider-Man costume because you thought that Spider-Man needed to have a bigger package or something?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so you're back on my show. Did you call my producer?
Yes, sir, I did. And the reason why, if I could, Mr. Henry.
Go ahead.
I did read where Jennifer Lopez has divorced from, or is separated, I should say, from Chris Judd. I have been a very big fan of Ms. Lopez for a great many years, starting with her movie, The Wedding Planner, and I've seen all of her movies, and I saw her Selena movie. I obviously think she's beautiful, and I also think she's talented.
Well, you want to come on my program now and make a pitch to Jennifer Lopez?
I do, yeah. I'm taking a chance. I mean, my father used to say, no pain, no gain. I do believe that I have what it takes to be, you know.
Jennifer Lopez's next boyfriend?
Jennifer Lopez's new boyfriend and her number one for the rest of her life.
All right. Tell us about yourself. Now, this is unusual, and I can't even guarantee that Jennifer Lopez is listening to this show.
I understand that.
But if she were, what would you say to her? Go ahead.
I just want to say, Jennifer, my name is Christopher Norton. I'm 28 years of age, and I think that I can work as your escort. I think eventually you'll come to trust me as a friend. I know that I could be personal security for you. I would, for a moment, like to tell you about myself. I know that I don't have as much money as you do, but I don't think you're looking for a man with money because you obviously are very successful. I'm currently working as a telemarketer, but I also know martial arts. I'm very good looking. I am very sexy. I've been told that I'm very sexy by a lot of different women, which is not to say that I have had that many women, but I do have had, I mean, I'm a little bit nervous.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I've had many women. I know how to dress. I know karate, and I wanted you, Ms. Lopez, to know that, and I'm not racist. At all, but I think that I want to say something to you that might tip you in favor of going out with me, and that is that I think it would be a good idea now for you to start dating white men for a change.
All right, now hold on for just a minute. What does that mean?
No, like I said, I'm not racist or anything.
What do you mean it's a good idea for her to start dating white men?
Because if you look at the men she's been with, they've been either black or Hispanic, and I'm not saying that that's bad, but if you look at, like, P. Diddy got her into trouble with the police. If I could, I'd like to address her.
As if she's listening?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. But tell me, address that white man thing.
What I was going to say, Jennifer, is if you look back on your relationships, you've been with a lot of Hispanic or black men. You were with P. Diddy. He got you in trouble with police. Chris Judd, who is your current, I guess is your husband that you're 6 months and out, and he was just a backup dancer, you know. Oh, Johnny Noah was a busboy in a restaurant. I don't think P. Diddy's not that famous. The other thing about blacks and Hispanics is they're always putting it out there and talking about what great lovers they are. White guys don't have to talk about it that much. We just am great lovers, and I wanted to say that too. So, yeah, I'm really nervous because I feel as if I'm talking to you, Jennifer. I am good looking, but I don't have an ego about it. I am very sexy, and I have a strong sexual energy, but I'm not, like, on no ego trip about it. I also want to say I don't have a lot of money, but obviously you do, so that's not what you're looking for. I'm good looking. I have sex appeal. I don't talk about how good I am. I just know that I am. And black guys, they always talk about how they're all that, but they ain't none of that, and I'm sure you know that by now.
All right, Chris.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to take your word for it, but you know, and I want to do a little experiment with you, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, you know that Jennifer Lopez goes, so you're saying that you're a sexy guy, you don't have a big ego about it, but you're very handsome. You know martial arts, and I would like to ask you about that in a few minutes.
Yes, sir, I do. I know.
Okay, not now, but I want to know. You know that she goes to a lot of industry functions, movie premieres and things like that, right?
Yes, she does.
All right, now how would you dress to accompany Jennifer Lopez on a movie premiere? Tell me about your vision of fashion, you know, at a movie premiere.
Mr. Renner, I've imagined many times getting out of a limo with J-Lo, going on the red carpet with the paparazzi. Okay, first off...
What would you wear? You're with her at the Academy Awards.
Okay, first off, I would wear a pair of Oakley shades because they look good on me. A pair of zippered red leather Italian boots. Hipster red pleather pants that ride just below the pubic bone. Because, again, I'm not trying to be no ego case, but I do have a really good-looking butt. And the hips are accentuated.
Okay.
I would wear a Lycra crop top, sleeveless tuxedo shirt with a sort of a stars and stripes design that I've kind of designed myself. I'd wear a whale's tooth earring on a 24-karat gold chain that hangs off what would be like a sapphire stud. Okay.
All right. Now, what about jewelry?
I've also designed for myself a turquoise and abalone shell necklace. A very simple gold belly button ring, also a diamond nose stud, and a gold nose ring. And I would also wear one leather bike glove on my right hand, and in my left hand I'd carry a whip. The top of my hair would be bleached totally white, and then the back I would shoe shine, and then I would top it off with a red gingham bandana that just knots very simply in the back.
So,
but see, that's very hip. That's very modern day red carpet. I wouldn't wear no tux. But none of the black guys she goes out with really know how to dress. I mean, this Chris Judd, who's a dancer with, could mean he's gay. I don't know. I'm very beach casual. I come from California, so I think she wants to look Californian, then date a Californian. But I think she should date a white Californian because she has been.
And you mentioned martial arts. You're trained in the martial arts?
Yes, I am. I'm.
Which ones?
Yes, sir. I've trained in three different systems, Shiatsu, Tai Chi, and Hatha Yoga. So I could put the boot to anybody who approached my woman. And I can tell you, I don't have a lot of money, but I would love her good. I would protect you from harm, J-Lo. And like I say, I'm white. And
all right, Chris, hold on. 1-800-449-8686 is our number. You just heard Chris Norton. He's a telemarketer from Manhattan Beach. He has just made a pitch to be with Jennifer Lopez. I know there's a lot of women listening. What if you were J-Lo? How would you react to that? If you're J-Lo and you're listening, give us a call. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show.
Show 1-800-449-8686.
All right, we have a guy on a phone here. His name is Chris Norton, and he read about Jennifer Lopez getting separated, and he made a pitch to be, you want to be her boyfriend or what?
No, I mean, I'd like to be her friend. Yes, I would eventually like to be her boyfriend.
You mentioned that you're good looking, you're sexy, you know how to dress, you also know martial arts. Let's talk about that. Are you adept at these?
I'm rock and roll at the drop of a hat. I mean, I could definitely protect her. So what I'm saying is she would have me not only as a boyfriend, but also someone who would be, she would not need no security.
You know what? You said shiatsu and what?
I know Tai Chi, shiatsu, I know Hatha Yoga. I am proficient in all of those. I'm rock and roll. So if she was hassled or anything, I would definitely be able to protect her. I mean, one of the things about me that I'm very lucky about is that not only am I good looking, but I also can kick people's butts. I mean, I've been in a lot of bar fights. I've worked as a bouncer, and I'm also good looking.
And you say you're a good dresser.
Well, I told you. I mean, I'm very unconventional, but I am, yeah, a good dresser. I'm a lot of stuff. And if she's out listening, I'd like her to, you know, hear me.
All right, 1-800-449-8686 is our number. Let me go to Angie. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm really worried about this guy. He sounds like the kind of person that has a shrine to this celebrity in his bedroom and is just waiting for the chance to accost her.
No, I'm not looking to accost her. I'm just looking to be her friend.
But you don't know her. Why not meet someone in your town, someone who you
What's wrong with wanting to meet somebody who you've admired?
There's nothing wrong with that, but the point to which you have taken it is borders on obsession.
No, I'm just saying that I could, because I do have... If I didn't think I had it, everything that she needs, I'm good-looking, I am sexy, I do have a great deal of sexuality, I do know how to kick ass, I do dress good.
Yes, sir, I'll give you all of that. But let me ask you this. Don't you think it would bother someone for the first thing that... One of the first things you tell them about yourself is, I can kick someone's ass? That shows a propensity for violence that's just frightening.
No, I'm saying that she needs security. She travels with security. But she could save money on sex and security if she had me for her boyfriend. The same guy that provides love and sex for her could be the same guy that's also given her security.
Do you think possibly the reason she needs security is because of people like you?
I have not threatened her. I have not written her no threatening letters. I've not stalked her. I'm on the radio right now. I didn't say nothing about it while she was married, but now she's single, I'm saying something about it. I'm nowhere near her.
Have you written her letters? Have you tried to contact her?
No, it's my first time. I'm saying it on the radio right now.
How long has this been going on?
I've always admired her since her movie's been out. I mean, what's it with you? Are you, what, are you jealous because no guy worshipped you?
Absolutely not. I'm not at all jealous. I'm worried about you, and I feel sorry for you.
I'm in love. I mean, are you?
Yes,
you
very much
anybody?
So, but I feel very sorry for you. You're one step
you
away from being the next thing on CNN.
Do you have a man who can have sex with you and kick ass?
Yeah, okay, listen.
See what I'm saying?
I'm extremely worried that you have all of the warning signs to be the next thing on CNN.
Do you have anybody in your life who dresses well, can kick ass, and have sex?
Look, absolutely, but I'm not the one on a radio show obsessed with a celebrity.
Wait a second, you just called a radio show.
Because I'm worried about you.
You just called up the radio show, okay?
Do you have a family or a support network that's close to you?
Do you have a husband or do you have a boyfriend?
Yeah, I have a husband. I'm very happily married.
Is he handsome or is he, you know, did you have to settle for, like, the weak one in the litter?
No, I'm very happy. But
you know,
let me ask you this. Do you have a family or a support network?
And all of the questions and saying you're worried for me, it sounds like you're obsessed with me.
No,
and
I'm worried that you're going to be the next thing to kill someone.
You're a little obsessed.
All right, well, we're not getting anywhere, okay? Thanks for your call. 1-800-449-8686. Are you obsessed with J-Lo?
Mr. Henry, I said to you that I know martial arts. I know how to kick ass. I've kicked many asses. I'm also a very good dresser. And, yes, I said it, and I'll say it again, that I'm white, and she just ought to try it. It's like you change flavors. She's been with black. She's been with Hispanic now. She ought to try a white man. If she went out with me, I'd take away all the bad memories of the past dudes that she got with. I'd swab. She's got a big, beautiful bottom, and I'd get out some alcohol and get rid of the P. Diddy germs. And
okay, man. All right. I got it. Okay. Well, you know what?
Has she called in?
No. Has J-Lo called in at all? Well, we're waiting for her to call in, and when she does, by God, we will... And wait a second. Okay, hold on.
Oh, God, has she called in?
Hold on, I think... Has Jennifer called in? All right, we got Jennifer Lopez on line one, man. Okay?
Oh, God.
Pull it together, okay?
Okay.
Jennifer, are you there?
Yes.
Jennifer, is it Jennifer Lopez?
Yes, it is. I'm happy to be on your program.
Okay. By the way, honey,
is this J-Lo?
Yes, I heard you say you won't be with me, and I'm very, I'm all sexed up over it.
Oh, God. I have so much love. Every movie I've seen, Wedding Planner, I've seen Cell.
You know, none of my movies ever bust $100 million, so every ticket counts.
Well, oh, my God.
Jennifer, this is Phil Henry.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, does it upset you when people say you got a big ass?
No, you know, I got to go on a bike, the man works in the backyard, everything, you know what I'm saying? But it's all good, and everything like that, and big ass, you know.
Jennifer, this is Chris Norton.
Yeah, you're the young man want to have sex with me?
Yeah, could I swab your bottom with alcohol?
You're damn right. Yep.
Okay, we need to kind of maybe clean that up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But no, Miss Arian, this is you have to understand.
Well, forget about swabbing her bottom with alcohol, all right?
I'm sorry. Jennifer, can I ask a question?
Yes, Chris. Just Chris Norton, is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
What's your favorite movie, what you ever did?
Well, that's a good question. I thought I gave that some texture. You know what I'm saying? I explored the lower level, you know, of my performance. You know what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying, right?
Could I ask another question?
Sure.
Did you love P. Diddy?
You know, I love him, but he's a mess. We got a gunplay, everything. You know, that spook is... I got to get away from that, you know. So you're right. I want to give that white thing a try. Ride the white pony, all that. And you know what your last name?
My name's Chris Norton.
J-Lo Norton be my name then, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. We're going to have to change that.
By the way, can I jump in here, Jennifer?
Sure.
We're talking with Jennifer Lopez. Jennifer, this is Phil Hendry again.
Yeah, you all butting in. I talked to Boy here about, you know, maybe get that booty up in the air some night, get that windswept thing going up.
Just let me ask you a question here. Wedding planners sell this new movie, Enough. What's that about?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. I have asked, and I've tried to read some reviews. Yeah.
You don't know the movie?
No, I don't know. But,
well, you read the script, didn't you?
Yeah, oh, I read my part. I don't read a whole script. What the hell you say? What the hell you say?
You know, don't you read the scripts of your movies?
No, you don't have. See, what you know about making a movie, man? Gee, look at this. Look at here. I get the script. I read my part. I go out. I say my part. And then I bug out, you know. And then I get in my car. I'm gone.
But, J-Lo, this is Chris. I mean, you don't know a script of your movie?
Everybody tell you sound like a fag, you know. You want me to...
Well, I'm sorry, I just have a sinus problem.
Well, I understand it. No, what I'm trying to say is I don't know what the movie's about.
Well, I mean, have you seen it?
I did see it, but I couldn't figure it out, you know. But no, I just get up there, that little quick, the big ass, and I'm gone, okay?
Ms. Henry, I don't understand. She sounds Mexican or something. I don't even think that's her.
No, is this Jennifer Lopez?
Yes, it is.
All right, well, that's good enough for me. All right, hold on, we have to take a break. Well, thank you very much, Jennifer, for being with us, and good luck with your new movie. What's it called?
I don't know. Is it what it...
I think it's Enough.
I think it's Enough, too. I think that's the end of a long and very, you know, kind of boring film career.
All right, well then... Good name for a movie, huh?
It's Enough.
All right. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
...1-800-449-8686. And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold!
And now, Sunday Morning Public Affairs. A service of the University of North Dakota. And the University of North Dakota Agriculture Department. Here now is your host, Raleigh Jeffries. And good morning and welcome to Sunday Morning Public Affairs. With us here is Dean Stanton. Dean is with the North American Man Poultry Love Association. I'm a little confused.
Why?
You in other words, you love to eat chicken?
No, I have sex with chickens.
Jesus.
Well, you see, now you're being racist.
Well, how am I being racist? What do you mean I'm being racist? You have sex with chickens?
Yes, and I...
That's not racist. I'm revolted by it.
Well, I don't... I have a right, see. I have a right.
Well, I see you brought one with you.
Right. This is my wife. What, you got a problem?
Okay, so that's your wife.
Yeah.
And the carton of eggs?
Our firstborn.
Okay.
This is Bobby, Susie, Eddie, Mary, Tanya. Well, I don't know. I didn't even name all of them because there's 12. Imagine that. Can you,
What are you talking about?
Well, imagine if you spit out 12 kids. I got to name all these eggs? Forget it. I'm going to name 6 of them and make omelets out of the rest.
All right.
Doesn't sound like your wife's too happy about it. Well, she'll get it. She'll get used to it.
This has been Sunday Morning Public Affairs, brought to you by the University of North Dakota Agriculture Department.
I got to get out of this job.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
Well, maybe not.
It was all right. 1-800-449-8686. No, I liked it a lot. But the sex with chickens, please. All right, so I got an update for you guys. And I'm not going to go into the reasons for the action that we took at our house, because if you listened to my show the other night, you know exactly what happened. Let's just say that we have now had to take corrective measures. We've now had to go into punishment phase for one of our kids. Now, I don't like to look at it as punishment. I like to look at it as, you know, getting their rudder, or what's it called? What's the thing that goes in the water for a ship? The rudder. Getting the rudder in the water and get them sailing straight. We have grounded, and here's what's going to happen. We have grounded the individual for the next 30 days, and that means absolute, well, you know what grounded means. You got no social life whatsoever. Now, for those of you who missed the show the other night and don't know what the offense was, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to go into it, all right? I've gone through it, but let me just say that it was severe enough to warrant the punishments that you're now going to hear rolled out. We've grounded the individual, and pursuant to advice that we're going to seek, we are going to allow that individual access to an automobile after the 30-day grounding, only for family errands and only for vital personal business. No use of the automobile for any social activity. He will have the social life back, but will not have the car for the social life back, if you understand what I'm saying. Now, how do you suppose this has all been received? Negatively, of course. And why is this? Because young people have such a short life. To them, the mistakes that they make in the context of the life that they've lived don't seem all that serious. The punishment that they received in the context of the short life that they've lived seems like a stint at Alcatraz. So this young person is going to realize that being grounded for a month and having access to an automobile for the summer for only vital family errands, while seems like a stint at San Quentin or Alcatraz right now, in point of fact, is nothing compared to the many summers that this individual will have and the many joyous years to come in that young person's life. And tonight kicks off summer. Do you know what that means to a high school student? Do you understand the number of parties? The number of parties this weekend alone that have been scheduled. This was the last day of school for high school. And tonight kicks off a summer filled with parties. Tonight was one big party. There's a party tomorrow night. There's a party on Sunday. There'll be parties next weekend. And I mean, it's going to be a big, big summer. And what has happened as the result of the faux pas created by this young person? No chicks, no beach, PlayStation will be in effect, television will be in effect, but we're talking about a social life relative to the use of an automobile that has been stringently curtailed. And I'm sorry, and I just got the word from my wife that this young person that we're talking about is pissed. Isn't it amazing how we'd get the message, but then we've lived a few years. This young person is pissed, okay, after what they did, after the activity engaged in by this young individual, and they're pissed that we're grounding them? I don't want to have to bust down on people for being dumb. I don't mind busting down on people for doing things that are not in their best interest because they don't have enough information. But I don't like busting down on people for just flat being selfish and dumb. That's the part that bugs me. And you know what? Like I say, there'll be many more summers, many more parties. It's going to be real interesting how the summer parties are handled. Booze, pot, fights, no parents at the house, cops showing up. Hey, man, I lived it. You guys have lived it. You know exactly what I'm talking about. run-ins with the police. Guns? I don't know. So maybe we don't need to get such a big, fat head start on all of that anyway, you know? I mean, it's, sooner or later, he's going to, you know, it's going to be a part of that world. It's just where it's going to be. And I'm sitting there, I'm saying, okay, is this young person smart enough to recognize a dangerous situation? So far, the answer to that is a qualified, yet I'm fairly confident in delivering it, no. And if this young person is not smart enough to recognize a dangerous situation, there will be many more to come. Many more dangerous situations having to do with all kinds of wonderful things. Sex, drugs, booze, fights, cops, you know. And welcome to America. Welcome to the new millennium. Just like the old millennium. Meet the new boss, same as the old freaking boss. No beach, no chicks, no car, no chicks, no television, and oh yeah, one more thing, no chicks. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Fight tomorrow night. I don't know who's going to win the fight tomorrow night, but I do know that in my heart, I recognize Lennox Lewis and anyone really that will get within a few feet of Mike Tyson as being special people. And I also know that I'm being irrational when I think that. You understand? Mike Tyson can't be as bad a man as everyone says he is. Yes, I know he's been convicted of rape, and I know he bit half of a man's ear off. But there's got to be some redeeming value to this man somewhere. If he was a complete animal, he'd be in a cage somewhere where the guards toss him the key to his handcuffs. He'd be in a Hannibal Lecter lockdown, one of those, you know, a dolly with a hockey mask. He ain't Hannibal Lecter. We know he's close. He did bite half of the guy's ear off, but he spit it out. But to hear people talk about Mike Tyson, to read the coverage of Mike Tyson, to listen to the jokes about Mike Tyson, to listen to the endless impressions of Mike Tyson, one would believe that Mike Tyson is a raving animal who's allowed out of his cage to fight and destroy a human being every 6 months or a year or 2 years, and then he's put back into the cage, a piece of raw meat is thrown through a slat, he's hosed down, and then he goes to sleep, he craps in a gutter, in a concrete gutter, and then goes to sleep there in his run. I mean, that's what people think of this man. There's got to be something about the guy that makes him lovable, that makes him likable, or that makes people want to support him and be with him. Other than the fact that he's a money machine. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. I just resist my own sense of fear. And I'm being honest with you, and I think if you were honest with yourselves, you'd feel the same way, that you would not want to be within 4 or 5 feet of Mike Tyson. And really, why is that? Because of all the publicity, right? He bit a guy's ear off. He bit a guy's leg. He looks like a raving lunatic. I talked to Jim Gray, the CBS... Excuse me, is he working for NBC now? Jim Gray is the NBC courtside reporter, and I know that you know who he is because he's been featured prominently during the coverage of the NBA playoffs. Jim Gray stands, I would say, about 5'9" or 10". He's shorter than me. I'm 6 feet. Jim's about 2-3 inches shorter than me. And Jim Gray, you may recall, was the reporter who walked up to Mike Tyson right after the ear-biting incident in the locker room, or somewhere in the news gathering areas outside of the ring, right after that, and stuck a microphone in his face and asked him why he did it. And Tyson went on that expletive-filled tirade saying, "Man's trying to mutilate, he's trying to headbutt me and everything." You remember that, right? "He's trying to mutilate me. He's trying to make me look like a monster in front of my children. That man..." He was very, very upset. And Gray stood there with a microphone, and I finally met him here in the hallway about 6 months after that, and I said to him, you must have had the crap scared out of you, and he looked at me, little Jim Gray, about 5'10", and he shook his head like, no, not me. And I, at that moment, I thought, well, that's what makes him a good reporter. Guy's like fearless. I mean, but I know he had to talk himself into going up next to that guy and asking the question, you know, how come you're such a freaking animal? Because you get the microphone. Oh, yeah? Watch this. Click. And just breaks him in half over his knee. I'm Jim Gray. Now back to you. But I did. I said to him, that Tyson thing, man, you must have had that. You must have had seven shades of crap scared out of you. And I remember him shaking his head like, not me. Dude, you're a better man than me. But anyway, I say that to say that I would not be surprised. Do you think Mike Tyson has like a large Thumbelina collection? It's just anything. What if he has a weakness for vanilla wafer cookies and a large Thumbelina video collection or something? He looks like he has metal teeth, you know, and he looks as if he's. I bet he has commemorative plates. Just. You know, you go to Tyson's house, and he has the whole Franklin Mint collection, you know, old colonial America. You turned your back for just a moment, and the little rascal, the tyke thing, all different races. You walk into his kitchen, he's got a whisk in a metal bowl with an apron, just,
now you watch this, see, now, the way to make a fruit sugar biscuit, as opposed to the other kind, just...
Now he sounds like J-Lo, doesn't he? So I say all of this. Why? Because in a few minutes, we are very, very gratified to tell you that we will have Mike Tyson live from the Peabody Hotel in Memphis on our airwaves. And I want to go into this interview with the knowledge and with the belief that this is a man who can be reached, and he's not just some raving, ear-biting lunatic, which is the way everybody sees him. I think he's a hell of a fighter, and I think that it's a great possibility he could stop Lennox Lewis inside of two rounds, but I also think it's possible that Lennox Lewis could stop him inside of two rounds, but then I'm the guy who thinks it's possible that Angela Lansbury could stop either one of them inside of two rounds. So I don't think I'm a real good fight, observer. All right, in a moment, Mike Tyson on these very airwaves on the Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. Like to line up some calls for Mike Tyson, you can ask him some questions on our show. 1-800-449-8686. Mike Tyson next on The Phil Hendry Show.
And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
Well, we're very pleased this hour in anticipation of and in the advent of the Mike Tyson-Lennox Lewis fight tomorrow night in Memphis. To have from Memphis right now at the Peabody Hotel, Mike Tyson, who will be challenging for that heavyweight crown. He's captivated the world as a great puncher, became the youngest heavyweight champion at 20, could well return to the pinnacle of boxing tomorrow night at the age of 35, should he beat Lennox Lewis. And we welcome him on our program. Mike, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mike, your strategy in this fight against Lennox Lewis, your strategy in the early going, we talked to Lennox earlier in our program, and he said that he believes you'll tire yourself out, that you will lose your temper.
Well, that is that's always been the rap against me. They say that I lose my temper. Yes, I do. I do have a bad temper, but I also believe that I have a tenacious ability to hang in the later rounds. And I don't know if Lennox referred to what a lot of people said about me that I don't.
Well, he said that you can't go a long distance.
Well, that's wrong.
Give us an example.
Well, I mean, it's just flat wrong. I went 12 rounds against Razor Ruddock. I went 12 rounds against Tony Tucker. I've gone a great deal of distance against Evander Holyfield. I recognize my mistakes against Evander, and I think that whole ear-biting thing has followed me a little too closely. I'd like to think that people can put that into some perspective and give it a the proper footnote, I think, in my career.
We're talking to Mike Tyson, who is going to be challenging tomorrow night Lennox Lewis for the heavyweight championship of the world. Mike, from 1985 to 1990, you could do no wrong. What has happened in the past decade?
Well, I don't think anything's happened. I think things have happened to me. I don't think anything's happened to boxing. I think that I have made some bad judgments. I've certainly made some bad choices, and I think that when you look at the, if you forgive me, using a perhaps nebulous term, the karmic wheel just is not turned in my favor.
Well, you were convicted of a very serious rape charge. You did time in prison. That can't be, you think that was something that happened to you?
I do, because I did it to myself, you see. I did it myself.
I understand.
And so that's why I did that. But I have no excuses. I screwed up. I think I have fought my way back. I fought a lot of tomato cans in the last 4 years. I fought everybody that wanted me to fight. And now I have my title shot back. And I'm happy for it. I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the management that I've received. I'm grateful for the people that want to promote my fights. And I'm thrilled.
All right, Lennox said...
Lennox, he's a real motor mouth, isn't he?
Well, he said to us, Mike, and we're talking with Mike Tyson. Mike, he said to us that he thought that you would punch yourself out by the fifth or sixth round, and then he'd be able to get inside.
I think that Lennox is going to do more than that. I think he's going to try to get inside early on, because I believe I heard him say that he could tap me in the second round. If he tries to get inside, that's when I'm really going to punish him. I have... one of the strongest punches in boxing, maybe in the history of boxing, perhaps not since Marciano. And I think that if Lennox tries to get inside of my punches and tries to take me out in two, I think I can land a few. I only need to land two or three to get him off of his game plan. And I anticipate that's going to happen.
Can you want to make a prediction?
Well, I think that I have the... I think I've got my basic punching skills back, and I think that I have... I think I can take him out in no more than four or five rounds. I'd say round number five.
Round five.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson with me here on the Phil Hendry Show. Mike, if you beat Mr. Lewis on Saturday, you are obligated to give him an immediate rematch. Does that concern you?
Well, I don't know that I'm obligated.
I mean, isn't it contractual that you you have to?
Well, yeah, you're right. Although I'm so stupid, I don't really understand contracts that I read, but I am smart enough to understand that I am going to have to, I'm going to have to fight the guy, and I am going to have to fight him well within the next few months. So I'd be happy to give him a rematch, and I'd be happy to put him out in two rounds again.
Mike Tyson joins us here on the Phil Hendry Show. We take a phone call.
Certainly.
All right. Here is Lonnie on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hey, Phil. And hopefully you know that as well as I do. That dude ain't Mike Tyson. Hell, he's white.
I know it.
He sounds educated, too.
What are you doing?
Who are you, man? Who are you?
Are you talking to me or are you talking to Mr. Hendry?
Yeah, you. The guy that
My name is
Mike Tyson.
I'm Mike Tyson.
You are not Mike Tyson.
Oh, really? Yeah. I see. So, and you're in a position to tell me that I'm not... Well,
what do you say he's not Mike Tyson?
Hell, listen to him.
What do you mean, listen to him?
He's white.
I am black.
You are not black.
Oh, really?
You ain't no more black than I am.
Oh, I see. Why is that? Because you know what black sound like?
Well, I know what Mike Tyson sounds like.
What's he sound like?
It ain't you.
What's he sound like?
Well, you ain't said a cuss word, okay?
Oh, you're a dumbass.
No,
you're a dumbass.
Okay, there you go. You're getting closer.
You're a dumbass.
Why are you doing this?
Wait a minute, wait. Are you Mike Tyson or not?
Yes, I'm Mike Tyson.
I'm not asking you.
I'm Mike Tyson. This is some dumb redneck who thinks
redneck.
He knows what blacks sound like. You been around any black folks?
No, I don't hate black.
Right.
I hate Mike Tyson.
You've been around a lot of black people.
I hate Mike Tyson.
Oh, I see. So blacks are all supposed to sound stupid. Is that it?
Well, he does.
I'm on a national radio show. I'm not going to swear on a national radio show. That's number one.
You do it on national TV. What's
the difference?
I don't
do it on a radio show. Number two, I'm black. And number three... You're a redneck who's not too bright.
No, you don't
know much about the game, the fight.
I know
game, so
much.
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Wait a minute. All right. You say this guy is
how the world
the only blacks this dork knows are the statues on his front lawn.
You know,
I'm Mike Tyson.
No, you're not. Are you not getting paid for this, I hope?
Am I what?
You're not getting paid for this, I hope.
All right. thank you very much for your call.
Would you hang up on him?
Yes, I did.
No, I wouldn't mind talking to him.
No, that's fine, Mr. Tyson. I want to move on with this, okay?
Some dumb Alabama redneck thinks he knows who I am.
Now, I apologize.
Look, let me tell all the dumb rednecks out there, stow it. Watch the fight tonight. I'm going to take down your boy, Lewis, the guy you're betting on, and then you're all going to feel like dumbasses because, you know.
Please don't be upset with me.
Well, you let him on the air.
All right. All right, so the fight is tomorrow night, and by the way, there's a funny line about the only blacks you know are the statues on your front lawn.
Well, I thank you.
Do you are you envisioning an entertainment career after? What are you going to do after boxing?
I do want to act. I've thirsted for it for a long time. I know that I want to be on the stage. I know that I've, and the other thing that I've always had a secret passion for is dance.
When did that start?
For me, it started when I saw Riverdance. It was Riverdance, and I think that is really what...
So you want to dance when you get done with your fight career?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, listen, Mike, we're going to let you go because I know that you're busy.
Yeah, I've got the press waiting for me right now, Phil, but I do appreciate it. Anytime you want me on your show, I'd be happy to oblige you.
Mike Tyson, thank you very much. Mike Tyson, former heavyweight champion of the world. And let me tell you, Mike, good luck tomorrow night.
Well, I thank you very much for that, Phil.
Thank you, Mike. He's had a storied career. He's had run-ins with the law. He's had a great many things happen to him. Excuse me, I just belched, but that's because I had Chinese for lunch. And please, forgive me. He's had a storied career. He's had a great career, and he's had some heartbreak in his career. But let's be honest. Here's a guy that's had a tremendous fight career, and now, after his fight career is over... He someday would like to star in Riverdance, and I think that you got to admire, man. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686, and I've got, who do I have? We got David Hall. He's the vice president of syndication for our show. Yeah, David, and what's going on?
You know something, and I mean this.
Where are you right now, David?
I'm having dinner with my wife. And I listen to this driving over.
And this can't wait till I'm off the air?
No, it can't wait till you're off the air. Because once again, what you've done is expose this company to a lawsuit.
I don't understand.
Now, you don't understand. That was Mike Tyson? You had a guy call in and say it wasn't Mike Tyson.
No, it was Mike Tyson.
It was you doing your own voice. You couldn't even do a black guy voice. Why were you... It was just you talking to yourself. Why?
David, my understanding was...
You're bull crap. You know that was you talking to... Your understanding was... What, your understanding was that you talking to yourself means it's Mike Tyson? Why did you do that? If Mike Tyson's people hear this, they know they can sue us once again for commercial misappropriation. Say that after me.
David, all of the...
Say it after me. Commercial misappropriation.
Commercial misappropriation.
You can... file a civil claim against somebody for misappropriating their likeness for commercial purposes. Do you understand that?
David.
Do you understand that?
Yes.
Then why are you on there pretending like you're Mike Tyson and you don't even sound like Mike Tyson?
Because I don't know how to do a Mike Tyson impression.
Well, what, everybody knows how to do a Mike Tyson impression. What do you mean you don't know how to do a Mike
Tyson? I can't do it.
You can't? Here it is. Hey, I'm Mike Tyson. Stick your tongue between your lips.
David, we're on the air.
Put your tongue between your... If you're going to get me into a lawsuit, put your tongue between your lips.
Okay.
Now, go up about 3 octaves.
All right.
Now say, I'm really going to kick Lennox Lewis's ass.
I'm really going to kick Lennox Lewis's ass.
Man, that's Mike Tyson. You can't do that.
You got to be putting me on. Nobody's going to buy that.
Oh, nobody's going to buy that. But you, talking as yourself, they're going to buy that. Even Bud can do a Mike... Is Bud there?
Right here, Mr. Hall.
Bud, do a Mike Tyson impression.
David, this retard.
Do it, Mike. Go ahead, bud.
Hey, everybody, I'm Mike Tyson. I'm going to be Lester Lewis.
His name's Lennox Lewis.
My understanding, it's Lester Lewis.
Is it Lester Lewis?
Lennox Lewis.
But I want you to go to the next room, get on the phone, call Phil, and then, Phil, you interview him as Mike Tyson.
Why?
Because you ass, you got me into this. Look it. Just do it.
You there, bud?
Hey, bud, I'm my cousin.
You gonna do well in the fight tomorrow night, Mike?
Yeah, I'm a new ass.
See, that sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, we're rocking and rolling, man.
Good, bud. I do that. I'm gonna kick ass.
Watch it, bud.
1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Can't tell you the number of times I have people say, who's that guy you hire to do the voices on your show? Who is that actor? As recently as yesterday, the email from the lady who said, who's that scumbag that you hired to say that he had tickets to the Laker game? Well, I don't hire any scumbags. I'm the scumbag. I do the voices on my show. And, well, that was an example of what I do on my show. The Mike Tyson interview. 1-800-449-8686. On yesterday's show, Chris Norton was on talking about how Spider-Man celebrates celibacy, the movie Spider-Man, and celibacy is bad because look what happened to all those celibate priests. They molested kids. So if you promote celibacy to kids, they will grow up to become child molesters, or at least that was his twisted thinking. And he thinks he should get into a Spider-Man suit so he can show off his package and sexualize Spider-Man a little bit more. Here's Chris Norton from yesterday's show.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
The guy that you were interviewing and give him all that time, I think he's a disturbed man. And all the reason I'm saying
ma'am,
that...
Ma'am, you're talking to me right now.
I am talking to you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, you were disturbed.
Well...
You're very disturbed.
I'm sitting here talking
you
about how...
Turn that she was hot, hot, hot.
I'm talking about
you
protecting children...
Business. So you want everything to be filthy and dirty?
No, ma'am. I
yes,
want to protect children from getting molested.
Children are getting molested by Spider-Man? By just
no,
going
they're getting molested.
Spider-Man?
Yes.
Those are two different
look, the priests,
things.
The priests are
the
celibate.
The priests are
okay.
Doing what they're doing.
Aren't the priests celibate? Yes.
They're not doing
they
it because
fondle?
You're celibate.
What?
Because they can go and have relations
did you see Spider-Man?
With another woman or with another adult.
Did you see Spider-Man?
Yes, I did see Spider-Man.
Okay, at the very end, even though she's hot as hell, you got to admit,
there
you
go
it.
Again. There hot as hell.
She was. I mean, are you telling me you couldn't see everything?
She was very attractive. You know what?
You couldn't
the
see everything.
The reason he walked away, it was because he wanted to protect her. Not because he's celibate and he wants to give impression of celibacy to children. It's okay to
okay,
see.
did he have sex at all in the movie? No. Did he have sex with her even though she's
why
hot?
Why do you have to be
no.
Sex in everything we see?
Because he was hot.
No.
You saw a nipple.
We take our children
didn't you see nipple?
To movies. And we don't want to show them that everything has to be about sex.
But Melina.
They show to respect.
Melina, didn't you see? You saw a nipple, right? Yes or no?
I saw nipples.
Okay, thank you very much.
I
God,
see nipples
geez.
Most of the time.
No, I'm talking about it in the movie. Okay?
What is it? Nipples.
Nipples. There was a
you
nipple
have
shot.
A thing with nipples.
There was a nipple shot in the movie.
Meaning what?
Meaning there was sex in the movie. So why didn't he have sex? Because the message was sex is bad.
The
now,
message wasn't
I have
that
a lot,
sex was bad.
I have a lot
that
of friends.
They didn't want to go too far into it because the movie is made for children.
I have
you
a lot of friends.
It's a family movie.
Do you?
It's not a porno movie like you're going to do,
no.
Okay?
How am I
you're
gonna
interested
make it?
In pornography? Then you, and where was interested in pornography, then you expect to see nipples? And
yes,
you
ma'am.
Expect to see your manhood? Ma'am, that's a family movie.
Ma'am, all I'm saying
is... You take children. You don't need to see sex every movie you go to. And I tell you, you piss me off. Well, all you have to say, she's hot, she's hot, she's hot.
She
you
want
to have
hot.
Sex with her?
She's very hot.
Do you want to have sex with her?
I wouldn't kick her out of bed for eating crackers.
Yeah, but she won't kick you.
Well, let me say something, okay? Because all you've done is insult me, and all I want to do is keep from fondlements. There's been a high incidence of priest fondlement, and I want to keep it down.
You want to keep it down?
Yeah.
You don't listen to yourself.
What did I say? I'm saying...
You want to keep it down by showing kids in Spider-Man if there was sex.
What?
You... What?
What did
you're
you say?
Saying that if there was if Spider-Man would have sex with the girl, this fondles with children would never happen again.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Well,
no.
Okay, here's what I think.
No.
Okay, I
no.
got a lot of friends in the adult film business, okay? And
yeah, I
if
heard.
You have people, because I'm also going to be interviewed in 2 weeks about being in an adult film myself.
And I'm sure we're not going to see that movie.
What? Hey, all I'm saying is...
What are you guys saying?
I'm saying...
You're saying
that
nothing.
If people are celibate, the $10 billion a year adult film industry...
That's what you're concerned with.
No, I'm not.
Yes,
I'm concerned.
You are. You're concerned that you're going to lose. People like you are going to lose.
I don't care.
That's what your concern is.
I don't care.
Not the children.
I don't care, but I said...
I'm not the priest what you're doing.
You should
you're
see a picture of me.
That you lose some business.
You should see a picture of me, okay? You can see my manhood.
I don't want to see a picture of you.
Oh, you can see my manhood. And
your manhood?
I have
it's like any other manhood.
I have a large manhood, though.
Yeah,
and,
well, to stick it up your ass.
Yeah, okay.
If you
well,
can reach it.
Yeah, well, you know what? If you saw me, you'd think I was very hot and you'd want to have sex.
That's what you think.
Well,
okay, thank you.
All right, thank
all right,
you.
Thank you very much.
No, you a pervert?
No. Ma'am, I have a very big manhood like an armadillo.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
If anybody knows who that lady is, her name was Melina, and she was calling from upstate New York. We would love to hire her as a newsreader on our program. All right, 1-800-449, I think it's, you know, anyway. 1-800-449-8686. Yeah, there's another nugget of comedy gold here on the Phil Hendry Show. If you'd like more, visit our archives, our audio archives, philhendryshow.com. Our audio archives are available to you, long form, short form bits that we've done down through the years. We've also got our 30-day archive, any show from the last 30 days, and, of course, our Listen Live line, so you can listen to our show no matter what time of the day. You can listen to the Phil Hendry Show on demand. It's all there, available for you at philhendryshow.com if you're a Backstage Pass member, and it's only $6.95 a month. It's self-renewing. You can buy a one-month membership. You can buy a six-month membership. It is high-quality, top-notch, high-quality audio, the very best audio quality on the Internet. Now, if you've been following our show for any length of time, you know there's a few websites, probably more than a few, that have bootlegged our stuff, that have put our stuff up, and it's real nasty ass quality stuff. It sounds like they've recorded it off a shortwave or something. Just touch my thing, and that's all you get. Not with a Phil Hendry Show website. It's high quality stuff, and it's there. And it's only $6.95. per month. Also, I'd like to say that coming up on July the 4th, the first ever Best Calls of the Year show, we'll have the top 100 calls of the year on July the 4th. Not the top 100 songs, but the top 100 calls of the year, July 4th, on the Phil Hendry Show. That's all coming up.
Show 1-800-449-8686.
Okay, we're back. Yes, David.
Phil, we want to try something on the program. I hope you don't mind. Bud is there, and he's going to hook it up to the equipment.
What is this, Bud?
This is called a show monitor.
It's a show monitor, and what it does is it registers whether you're interesting or whether you're being boring.
I'm going to hook up right now.
Whether I'm interesting or whether I'm boring.
Yeah, but just for example, the conversation I'm getting. You got it right there, bud?
I'm going to throw a switch right now. Here we go.
All right, now that means that right now your program is interesting and you know, is doing people like, okay?
Right. So, if it's not interesting, and I'll throw the switch, you'll hear this.
In other words, my show's dead.
Right. It's going to be dead if you do anything that's boring.
So, I want to know, well, why is it doing that?
I don't know. Adjust it, bud.
Okay, it's better now.
Yeah. So, whatever you're going to do here in this last segment of the hour, make sure it's interesting, and it'll register.
Okay, I wanted to start talking this hour. It's very annoying, though, isn't it?
No, it's all right. We'll lower it down, bud.
All right.
Okay, so I'll be listening.
All right, David. So, bud, in other words, you're going to be watching this show monitor to make sure that... What's happening?
You're boring. See, you have to say something people are interested in.
I'm asking the question. If you have this show monitor hooked to... What is that supposed to mean?
It's dull. Just do something. Anything. Just start... See, now it's back up to speed. Yeah, see, the show died again. You got it. The goal, Phil, is to keep the show monitor going, okay? See, like right now. Keep it going. Say interesting things.
All right. Jesus H.
Come on, will you? There, go.
All right. I'd like to talk this hour about the Michael Skakel trial. Michael Skakel, as you know, was a Kennedy, and years ago he was.
Oh, Jesus. Come on, pick it up. Go.
Michael Skakel was a Kennedy, and he was accused of murdering people. And then...
Why is it doing that? Because it's dull. You gotta do something interesting.
I'm talking about the Michael Skakel trial, and he was convicted of murdering a next-door neighbor, and I feel that they didn't have enough evidence. Now, let's look at the evidence in this case. You see, there was a golf club shaft, and there was...
Phil, the goal is to make it interesting.
What's going on? What's going on?
I can't keep the show monitor going because I guess I'm... See, it's going...
Every time you open your mouth, you're dull. Liven it up, you're dull, okay? There, see, now it's moving because I'm talking.
Me too, Mr. Hall.
And Bud. But when you open your trap, what do you mean Michael Skakel trial? Do Jennifer Lopez's ass or something. Go.
Okay. Jennifer Lopez's butt is very interesting.
No, you blew it, okay?
How did I blow it?
Because you said butt, yeah, I say ass.
Jennifer Lopez's ass is very interesting because now what?
You're going to say it's hot, not interesting.
Jennifer Lopez's ass is hot, and the reason, I don't even believe her ass is really all that, oh, Jesus, okay.
Come on, will you?
You know something, Phil? I don't know whether you know what you're doing, but you're murdering your show. You're murdering it. Do you know what that sound? You know what that sound represents?
It's a heart monitor. Yes, it's a heart monitor.
Right. And as long as that heart monitor is going, your show is interesting. But the minute it flatlines, you're killing it.
So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to.
Well, you're killing it.
I'm trying to.
Just. Oh, there. It's back to life again. Phil, pick out a topic. And talk about it, and make it interesting.
Right, Mr. Hall, that's how I tell him. Pick it out, make it interesting.
Okay?
Okay. The Triple Crown, Michael Skakel. I don't know what to talk about, okay?
Look at that, you got pissed, now it's up again.
Turn it off, will you, bud?
Okay, but every time you open, see, look at that.
Turn it off! Stupid idea, all right?
Jesus, all we're trying to do is...
I know what you're trying to do. Every time I open my mouth, it's boring.
I just want to see if it's still... Yeah, see, I'm interesting.
Good for you. The show monitor. Good Lord. I don't know what... Michael Skakel, War Emblem, whatever you guys want to do. Turn it off! 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. So anyway, as I was saying, I'm off tonight to go watch the Laker game, and then tomorrow night we're going to look at the Lennox Lewis fight and the Mike Tyson fight on pay-per-view. And then tomorrow afternoon is going to be the big Belmont Stakes.
for the Triple Crown for War Emblem. This is one of those really cool weekends where there's all kinds of... And then World Cup fever. Maybe I'll even catch some of that. I don't know. I can get into that every now and again. Like I said, France lost. That was cool. The Brits beat Argentina. That's also pretty solid. We beat Portugal. So things, you know, there's good news all around. But in any event, we are going to go off to... tonight we're going to have a barbecue at this couple that we know. And we're going to watch the Laker game. And this happens to be the parents of, you know, this kid that, well, in any event, we have some very interesting conversation. You know, it's a funny thing about parents. They never want to believe that their kid can do any wrong, right? I'm the only one of all of these parents that can ever say, you know, our kid's a piece of crap. He's just really, he ought to go to prison for life. Most parents, they cannot believe that their kids can do any wrong. Not most, but I mean a lot. You know, they're going to kid themselves. It's really interesting. I guess it means if you want to believe your kid did something wrong, then maybe you did something wrong, right? Anyway, after tonight, then we'll watch the Belmont Stakes tomorrow. And as I was saying earlier in the program, get out to a racetrack soon. You want to see the rich and the poor, the good and the bad, the fat and the skinny, the ugly and the good looking. Go to the racetrack. There's no other place in the world that I can think of where every kind of humanity meets. White, black, Hispanic, Jewish, Gentile, fat, ugly, handsome, rich, poor, handicapped, not handicapped. Everybody there. Angry, happy, drinkers, non-drinkers. The track's the only place, when you go to the racetrack, you'll see the most gorgeous woman on the arm of some guy dressed to the nines going to the turf club. The same thing, you'll see the family walking into general admission with the collapsible chairs and the cooler with sandwiches in it, you know. So the guy going up to the turf club where he's going to eat his duck l'orange, and there's the folks down there with the egg salad sandwiches, and everybody in between. And plus, you see great drama right out there in the track. And the track is also a place, and I know there's only really two places where this will happen to you. Either like a subway station downtown at midnight, or the track, where a guy will walk up to you and just say, "Man, if I was Pink Eye, I wouldn't pull the horse there in a quarter turn. That was ridiculous, man. That guy is just, he's crazy. Did you have that horse?" You have a guy just walk up to you out of nowhere and say, "You know, Shoemaker was on that thing. Gary Stevens is a bum. Would you look at that last race, huh? Did you have that? What'd you have?" "Well, it's none of your business." "Oh, none of my business. Oh, okay. Okay, light touch." And then they walk away and they're pissed, you know. "Man, that horse, I had that thing on the quarter pole, man. All he had to do was just let it run, and instead he pulls up. That is bull bleep." You know, people just wander up, and then they wander away, and then they wander up, and they wander. It's fantastic. And pickpockets and everybody. I saw a guy get his pocket picked at the track. This is amazing. I don't know if this would happen anywhere else, but I'm going up the escalator at Santa Anita many years ago, and I was on my way up to the clubhouse, and all of a sudden, and you know how difficult it is to get through a crowd of people that are going up a staircase and you're trying to go the other way. It's impossible. This guy was plowing right through people going down the staircase, his face as white as a ghost, wearing kind of a little suit, but he looks scared, and he's running the opposite way down the staircase, and at the top of the stairs, all of a sudden looms this tall, like, you know, Randolph Scott-looking, Texas-ass-looking dude in a pinstripe suit, and he says, "Stop that, son of a bitch!" And by God, people reached out and grabbed this guy because he picked this big dude's pocket. "Pick my pocket!" And they grabbed this poor, scared kid. I felt sorry for the kid. You know, you can't be picking anybody's pocket. But he looked like he was about to get his ass kicked. As soon as they got him up there to the top of the stairs, and the security grabbed him, took him away, and like, only at the track, you know. Guy says, "Stop that, son of a bitch." "Yes, sir. I think I'll throw myself into harm's way for you, sir. Whoever the hell you are. As far as I'm concerned, he can take your wallet and run. What do you think of that? I bet you got six more just like it. All loaded with the big spending green. You know, that big, the big ones? I don't know if it's Franklin or Grant or whoever. Be fun tomorrow. Check it out. The Belmont. Triple Crown. War Emblem. I'll tell you, when I think back on the...
You're boring.
See you later.